Welcome to the Social Work Social Podcast. My name is Melanie Matthews, and I'm a registered social worker, as well as your host for this podcast. The Social Work Social is a place to explore the role of social workers in mental health treatment, social justice and advocacy, and other aspects of community work. But social workers rarely work in isolation, so we'll be talking not just to social workers, but other professionals and people with lived experience to learn about their understanding of mental health and mental health treatment. Before we begin today's episode, I have two disclaimers to make. First, you should be aware that all the information presented in this podcast is specific to Ontario, Canada, unless otherwise specified in the episode. Different professionals follow different rules and restrictions dictated by the regulatory body in their area. The second disclaimer is that nothing in this podcast should be considered medical advice or mental health treatment. Your mental health is unique, so what we talk about in this episode may not be quite right for supporting your mental health in the best way possible. So if you're interested in any of the topics presented here and want to know more about if the treatment options are right for you, be sure to get in contact with a professional directly. Now, let's get started on today's episode. In this episode, we talk to Melissa. She tells us all about her experiences during her first year of being a counselor. There's no trigger warning for this episode.
My name is Melissa Campos, and I'm a registered social worker. Within that, I have a bachelor's of science in psychology, neuroscience and behavior. I have a BSW, and I also have an MSW. And I was born in Hamilton, Ontario, to parents who emigrated from El Salvador. So I kind of feel like that intersectionality piece didn't really get explored until I entered the social work field or the social work courses. And I just feel like that expanded so much about my understanding of people. And then thanks to my master's being out in BC, I've been here ever since I graduated from my master's. So that's where I currently reside and really love the nature here.
You know, I didn't actually know that you had a degree in psychology before you got into social work. What made you decide to get into social work?
I actually hadn't taken a psychology course until my first undergraduate degree. And then once I did, I was like, oh my gosh, this is fascinating learning about human behavior. And there was this initial underpinning of like wanting to help people that I've had for a lot of my upbringing and growing up. And so I wanted to kind of put that together into counseling one day. And so through psychology, you can't really do much with an undergrad. So I was like, okay, maybe I need to pursue clinical psych. And I applied, didn't work out. And then my life circumstances brought me to London, Ontario, which is where the social work program is that I attended there at King's University College. And I remember thinking, this is a great opportunity to still be on that pathway of learning about people and eventually working towards that goal of being able to counsel others. So it was like really in line with learning more about people and having a greater understanding about what makes people tick.
I feel like both social work and psychology have such similar applications in terms of counseling, but such really different perspectives. Did you find that there was a big difference between what you learned in psychology and what you then learned in social work?
Oh yeah, definitely. When I took the psychology program, it was very like individualized. You know, I was learning about the individual's brain and learning about how we do the behaviors we do. And there were some elements of like social psychology where we talked about like prejudice and racism and stereotyping, but it never really seemed to expand outside of that. And because this course was really focused on like the science side of psychology, it didn't really have much of a mental health focus either. I think that's changed since I left. Like, I think they now have a stream that involves psychology and mental health. I'm not sure. I just remember there were talks of that. But when I entered social work, I honestly feel like my brain was opened up, filled with a whole bunch of new knowledge about the world, and then wrapped back up at the end of 2 years, 3 years if you include my master's. So it was just really going from psychology of like looking at the individual to going to social work to seeing that they can be one of many systems, and kind of just expanding that view outwards to be like, wow, yeah, we can be impacted by so many things outside of us. Like even the physical environment that we live in can impact us. So it's just really fascinating to have that side be brought into the understanding of human behavior.
I found that that was really the experience that I had in social work as well. It's so interesting that you bring up the idea of physical space too, because my master's research project was focused on the experience of post-secondary students in mental health. And that was the biggest thing that came up, was people talking about how the change in their physical location and even like the lighting in the residence buildings had an impact on their mental health. It was really fascinating, actually. And it's something that you don't really think of if all you're doing is studying the science of mental health. You don't realize that that's something that has such a big impact. So absolutely, I thought it was really cool being able to study that through your social work. You mentioned too in your introduction that you really got to do some self-exploration in social work. What was that like?
Lots of reflecting. I'm sure you remember those days and still continue probably to this day of like really questioning, really unearthing, what is it about like this topic or this interest that fascinates us or impacts us differently? And so I think, for instance, the field of like substance use was one that I was not really familiar about, but we had this one professor who encouraged us to attend like an AA/NA meeting, respectfully, of course, just so we could understand what that process is like of potential clients like walking that path and then having to write a paper about how that experience went for us. And I remember before entering where the meeting was taking place, like my heart rate was like super high because I was just so unsure what to expect. And then when I walked in, it was like totally normal environment. Like, I don't know what my brain was building up in my head, but it was so different to just go in and like listen to stories and be a part of like the circle. And it was up to us to determine if we wanted to self-disclose like why we were there. Me personally, I just kind of wanted to fade into the background so that I didn't want to impact too much of the dynamic. But I remember at the end, someone approached me and was like, hey, if you need someone to like help you through this, like here's my number, like immediately connecting, you know, through that process. So I just found that really fascinating that we had that opportunity in addition to like a lot of our courses to really think about like, what is it our clients are going through and how do we feel about these things, you know, using services like that. So that was, yeah, that's always going to be an experience I'll remember, of just how it wasn't like a judgmental to be like who you are before and after that kind of experience, but more just exploring like what that's like.
Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the greatest parts about being in something as experiential as social work. Having placement opportunities too was such an important thing. You learned a lot about the environment and the clients, of course, but also about yourself and the experience of being in that type of setting. I know that I completely changed my career path based on like my placements as well. I had no idea that this is what I was going to end up doing at the end of my education. It sounds like you did know though. You always kind of knew that you were going to be going into counseling. How did you know that that's something that you wanted to do?
You know, I think growing up, it was under the general umbrella of I want to help people. And at first I thought maybe being a doctor was the idea around it. But then I applied for a program that generally people go towards being a doctor, and like, and it didn't pan out for me. So I'm like, okay, well, there are so many other ways to offer assistance. And then there was an experience that I went through. And after that experience, I was thinking about, wow, if only like I had gotten a different type of support, kind of like what a lot of people brings us to this field was, you know, is that kind of idea of like what we've been through and how we want to maybe change or do something different if we had the opportunity. So after that experience, it really solidified like taking on that counseling role, I think. But I kind of, now that I'm in it, I kind of changed like the population that I'm with, because I always thought I was going to be working with children and families, but being in the room with children and families takes a lot of energy and takes a lot of understanding different dynamics. And as a new clinician, I just thought maybe I need a bit more support about how to hold space for different perspectives. So I decided in the end to think about what kind of interests I think would be a good match in that clinical space. So I ended up choosing working with individuals who are between the ages of like 20 to 40 with anxiety and things under that umbrella. So it started off with like a really vague idea around it, and then having a change early on to actually a bit more focus, a bit more narrow idea. And then even within that narrow idea, there's still like so many different channels in terms of like populations and modalities to work with. So it's been, yeah, a bit of like a exploration process, if you will, to get there.
Definitely. It's such a diverse field, counseling. And so getting into those really, really specific populations, yeah, it takes a lot of exploration to get there and to figure out what exactly it is that you want to do and how you want to do it. So how long have you been in the counseling field now?
It's been, as of this week, I think like a full year.
Wow. So you're new, but not super new anymore. A full year. What is that like, reaching that milestone?
It feels pretty impressive. It feels slow and fast at the same time, because during the early days, it was thinking, you know, are clients even going to see me? Like, what's going to happen past like session one? What is that going to look like? But then the ball just kept rolling and clients kept coming, and it just feels like, I think I was telling you earlier, like a roller coaster of understanding more about myself and different types of client experiences. So with that momentum, it's just hard to believe that a year has already gone by. It still feels like being new to the field, even at this time.
I feel like I'm about a year and a half into it now with my counseling practice, because I started my private practice, I think like 2 weeks after the pandemic started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting timing, actually, because it was near the end of March of 2020 that I decided to launch my counseling practice. It felt like the right time because there was, I mean, lots of demand for mental health services at that point. So
certainly, yeah,
kind of went for it. But it's been really interesting working during a pandemic and doing counseling that way. What has it been like for you? Out in BC, have you been doing only virtual counseling, or do you see people in person as well?
Right. So I started in August of last year, which meant that the pandemic had been around for about 5 months. And even at that time, I wasn't sure if I was going to actually dive into counseling, because I was doing another job, but it was a casual position and it required working with children and families. But because of the pandemic, we couldn't have that face to face. So I just decided, you know what, maybe now is the time, because some of these doors are closing. So maybe this is the time to open this one. And so when I got the position, this group agency that I'm a part of, they had already closed down and done virtual. So they were actually past that window to the point of opening to do in person, which is great, because, you know, we've done a lot of practice in person through our training. So I think it would have been a really hard adjustment as a new clinician to go right into virtual, which I still have to do and still do to this day, because different clients have different preferences. But I found it was a little bit of an easier start, just because we could provide that in person. Lately, though, we've had to introduce wearing masks in session, which is new for us, because we could have that 6-foot distance between clients. But now, because of how things are changing with COVID rates, we now have to wear a mask. And I'm starting to find that it does cause some challenges to really feel like you're engaging with someone. Like, luckily, I've been able to know some of these clients, so we're familiar with each other's facial expressions. But there's still so much that I think can be missed, even with just a piece of fabric, never mind the virtual space, which can provide some challenges too. So it's been a bit of a learning curve of being really patient, especially when there's like audio lags or Wi-Fi issues, and like learning how to hold that space virtually. But at the same time, we're all in the same boat, which is kind of a bit of a saving grace that we're all figuring it out at the same time.
It's definitely had a lot of challenges. My practice has been almost entirely virtual. There was a very brief period of time where I felt comfortable doing in-person counseling, but it was with masks and everything as well, because the office space that I was renting, this is Toronto and we have no space, was very, very small. So we had to do masks. So that was definitely a challenge. And even I've found that my interactions with people virtually have changed too. I don't know if you've noticed, because we're talking over Zoom right now, but like I do a lot of head nodding, a lot more facial expressions. Even when I'm talking to clients, I have like big hand gestures and stuff too, because I'm trying to convey all of those nonverbal signals when you can only see like my head and shoulders. So it's definitely been a big adjustment. I feel like I'm doing so many like super exaggerated things to try to get across the same message that I would have been able to easily do if we were sitting across from each other just in person. So it's definitely been a huge change. And that's not even taking into account that some of my clients don't even want to do video chat because they're not comfortable with entirely phone counseling, which is really, really difficult.
Totally. And it's something that I watched this like workshop on doing virtual counseling because they, I think it was provided through the OASW actually, because they recognize like a lot of us are now hopping into this modality. And one of the things he mentioned was like, one thing you could do is like pick up your video and just like show what your room is. And this is like, depending on the comfort level of the clinician as well. But I sometimes try that with like, especially youth, just so they know, like, this is my space. There's no one else here. Like it's closed. And I, you know, offer them to show their space too, if they want. And it can kind of be like a little bit of a conversation starting like, oh, like all those posters over there, or that like picture that you have. And of course, if they don't want to, that's totally fine too. So it's like even different forms of interacting. But I find with like phone counseling, it's really checking in with those pauses to be like, okay, I just didn't want to interrupt. Like, are you still thinking about that? Or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big one. Because you don't get those like nonverbal cues that the person's done speaking. So you never know. I've had to really learn a lot from my clients too. There's some that it's really fast paced and you want to interact very quickly. And then I have a few that there's long periods of silence because I know that they're still thinking, and I've made that mistake in the past of cutting them off too soon. And so it is really, really something you pay attention to. And honestly, I feel like I get to know my clients really well because you don't take any of that stuff for granted. You have to be really in tune with them. As a new clinician, what kinds of modalities and stuff have you been exploring using with your clients?
Yeah, I'd say the one that I come back to the most often is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And I think that kind of gels well with like my background in psychology and social work. But areas that I kind of try to explore as well as self-compassion work, mindfulness. I'm really interested in wanting to learn more about acceptance and commitment therapy as well, and eventually moving towards some body-based therapies like somatic experiencing or even EMDR one day. But for now, it's a lot about just looking at the perception. And if we can't access the perception, what can we do with the body? Through like mindfulness exercises. That's kind of what it's been looking like for me at the start.
I feel like that's one of the biggest benefits of working with a new clinician is you're so like engaged in the learning process still. You're actively exploring all of these different modalities. You're, you know, really, really engaged in the learning process. And I feel like that's, I'm sure there's lots of clinicians who've been working in the field for years who still do that as well. Ongoing learning is definitely a part of counseling. But I feel like new clinicians were really engaged in that stuff. I still attend webinars and do research about that kind of stuff all the time too. And it's because I know that this is still something that I'm exploring and something I want to learn more about. And it's something I'm pretty open with my clients about as well. I don't know if that's something you do, but I've had it come up before that someone will come to me with a problem that I'm not super familiar with. And I'll just tell them straight up, like, no, I haven't worked with anyone who's experienced that before. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about it? And we'll work together to find some sort of treatment plan that's going to work really well for you. Because I don't want to pretend like I'm the expert in anything, because I'm not. I'm definitely still learning. And I found that people are actually really receptive to that as well.
Yeah, it's so true that it's almost like transparency of an approach. Like sometimes I'll tell clients too, like exactly what you just said, you know, I won't have all the answers, but we can do our best to bring both minds, or if there's more minds in the room, together to try and figure this out. And I think that's like, it can be really helpful, especially working with people who have never gone to counseling before, because that happens quite often working with the population that I do, where it's their first time. And I think that helps them to know that the power imbalance doesn't have to be so different. Like, I'm also here to try my best to support you. And I try to be very honest with consultations, being like, yeah, if you don't think like, you know, we're going to have a good connection, or maybe the modalities that I'm using don't seem to be a good fit for you, like definitely feel free to seek out someone else who you're more comfortable with, because that rapport is just so important. And I think that comes through with those small ways of that honesty with our clients. I think they really find that refreshing almost to know like, oh, this person isn't just going to assume they know everything about me or assume they know all the answers or all the strategies. They're going to try and understand me first, knowing that they might not know everything and they're going to be honest about that.
Absolutely. I do the same thing in my consultations too. I feel like that's something I've had to get comfortable with as well, because as much as I've always been like, fit between therapist and client is really important. So feel free to like shop around, like figuratively speaking, shop around. Feel free to like do consultations with other therapists and make sure you're working with the person who's feels like the best fit for you. Even though I always said that, the very first time someone decided not to work with me as a therapist, it was really hard not to take it personally. Like, I was like, what's wrong with me? Why don't you want to work with me? I'm fantastic. But really getting comfortable with that and actually living what I was saying was definitely an adjustment. It was something that was really hard as a brand new clinician, was to accept that I'm actually not the best fit for everyone. And that's really okay.
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me of like my very first session, and that person never rebooked. And I was like, oh, like what a start. But at the same time, like, I'm glad, you know, at the time I was like, oh, is it me? Like, what am I doing wrong? And there's so much imposter syndrome, I think, that plays into being a new clinician, because you just don't have the data to demonstrate as people who are in the field for like 5 years, like, oh yeah, people come back or people figure it out, or it's not just you. There's so many other factors. But when you're new and you only have like five clients and maybe two of them haven't rebooked, your brain starts to play those games on you of like, oh, maybe it's me. And I think that's great that you brought that up too, because I think that's a very common experience. I'm not sure if that ever quite goes away from like talking to some of my more experienced colleagues who've been in the field for longer, of feeling like you're still, I guess, still checking in with yourself so that you never feel like you know everything or there's still so much to learn.
I feel like the imposter syndrome thing is so real among clinicians as well. I actually have a friend who started her own private practice at around the same time that I did. And we do like still even a year and a half later, check in with each other. Like, am I actually a good clinician? Am I really supposed to be here? Is this something I'm actually good at? Or am I just really doing well in faking my way through it? And being able to get that reassurance from a peer is really important, because yeah, the imposter syndrome, so real, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Which I think has been really helpful being part of a group practice first for me personally, because you can have those people to bounce ideas off of. And it's great having those peers too outside of like the agency to like talk it out and feel supported. But it is so nice to just like look across the hallway or look across the office and see there's my colleague and be like, hey, can I just touch base with you really quick just to get that support?
Do you still engage in any sort of clinical supervision at this point?
Oh, definitely. Our agency, our boss, she's like she really advocates for supervision. She did her training in Australia where it was like mandated to meet as a group each month. And she really tries to instill that in our agency as well. So sometimes I'll meet with her one-on-one for supervision or like a group supervision. And now I'm thinking about, or I'm looking for specific supervision for specific modalities to build on those competencies. So yeah, I would highly recommend for people in the field so that they don't feel so untethered to find those people that they can just bounce ideas off of and get a little bit more guidance.
I feel like that's always been super validating as well. Anytime that I've worked with a clinical supervisor before, it's always been such a validating experience and something that's helped me feel way more confident in my practice as well, to know that there is someone behind me who's backing me up and saying, yeah, absolutely. Like, here's some more ways for you to grow. You're doing great. Keep on going. It's just kind of a nice reassuring thing to be able to get from someone who's really more experienced, who's been in the field for longer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so nice to, like, sometimes when you bring up a case and they say, ooh, that's a tough one, it's like, oh yeah, it is a tough one. Like, if you're saying that, it's like, okay, I'm not alone in feeling like a little bit lost here and how to navigate this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely validating for sure. So do you see yourself staying in counseling long term, or do you think that there's some career change in your future?
Yeah, it's a great question because I spoke about like how this is where I wanted to be. And I think currently I'm like very interested to keep exploring being a counselor because it can take so many pathways and so many modalities to kind of keep it interesting, if you will, so that you're always keeping on your toes, I guess. But I have definitely thought about like going back into academia to pursue maybe a PhD, just because it's almost like an accordion. I did a lot of theory through my education, and now having like a lot more frontline, it's kind of seeing that maybe there's some gaps here, or there's some populations that aren't represented in the research. And so it's maybe going to be taking some of that into a PhD and really diving deeper into exploring those things. So that's a maybe. We'll see, because, you know, it was great meeting a lot of friends through education, but sometimes those papers and assignments can really feel challenging, especially at the level of a PhD. So that might be one area, or maybe even just like transitioning to a totally different career entirely. So I don't know. I don't know yet, but I guess in short, maybe, maybe there might be a change.
I feel like that's something that people who are constantly learning all kind of struggle with sometimes. It's something that I've thought about too. I've been, you know, playing with the idea for years that I want to continue and do like a doctorate, a PhD, and maybe go into like teaching. That'd be cool. But I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to get there or what it's going to look like, but kind of just along for the ride at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a great thing to be doing in a career as an adult, but that's where I'm going with it anyways. And honestly, I kind of like the idea of just having the freedom to do whatever feels right in the moment rather than sticking to some prescribed career path. I feel like that's something I learned in social work as well, was that there's so many different opportunities that you don't have to stay in one place forever. You can learn, you can grow, you can do kind of whatever you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's so many facets to us. And this might be the career facet, but there's also all these other interests. Like, I've definitely thought about just becoming a yoga teacher and just diving into that, because that's just one of my interests, is that kind of body-based way of relaxing and building that mindfulness. So it's true. It's so nice to have that awareness and flexibility to really check in with yourself to see, like, is this still filling my cup in the same way? Or is there something else that might need a change to feel maybe fulfilled or just feel like exploring?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that comes with all the reflection that we learn to do in social work, is you really know whether or not you're feeling satisfied with your job, because one of the skills they taught us was how to reflect on how we're feeling and how we're being influenced by our work as well. So it's kind of a cool, unique thing about social work.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of sum it all up, if you had to leave a message in just a couple of sentences, what would you want people who are new to social work or new to the counseling field to know?
New to social work, there's so many different fields as your podcast is exploring, which is great that they can hear these stories. New to counseling, it can feel like some days are up and down, and really consider that supervision that we talked about, what your interests are, your self-care boundaries, and knowing that it's okay if you make mistakes along the way, because that's been something I've definitely had to work on, and know that there's lots of people that can support you with that too. So good luck.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Thanks so much to Melissa for sharing her experiences. You may remember in episode 26, we talked all about social workers and burnout. In that episode, I reflected on some of my own experiences, and since then I've done a lot more reflecting. I'm currently dealing with some physical health stuff, which has made it tough to keep up on all my work and other projects. It's hard to acknowledge my limits sometimes, but also super necessary in order to avoid burnout. So at this time, I've decided to take a short break from the Social Work Social to rest and recover. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook for updates about my return. Thanks for listening to the Social Work Social podcast. By sharing information and stories, we hope that you will gain new knowledge and empathy for those who are different from you. We all have unique experiences with mental health based on our backgrounds, experiences, and how we're impacted by the society we live in. What unites us is that we are all deserving of mental health support that is appropriate for our circumstances, accessible, and feels good.